welcome to LifeBeat. I'm your host, Anna Visser. Today, we are doing a feature on the abortion pill. So this is going to be a deep dive into the abortion pill, on its history, on how it works, on all of its complications, and kind of what's going on with it today, as you probably have been seeing it in the news, and there was some new developments on it as of yesterday. So I'm just going to do a deep dive into all of that and kind of what you need to know. So first, I'm going to talk about the history. RU486 was developed in 1982 in France by Rosnau Yukloff, who his name is RU486. So they get the name of the abortion pill from his name. Fun fact about this guy, it's not so fun, but it's a fact. His parent firm is Hoechst, who was good friends and had connections with the manufacturer of the cyanide gas that was used in Holocaust. So these are all little connections that kind of tell you that this guy is not a great guy. So from there, from being manufactured in 1982, people in the U.S. started to hear about it, and the FDA blocked the pill from being entered into the U.S. because, first of all, it wasn't approved, and they only allowed unapproved drugs into the U.S. if they were life-saving drugs. And so, obviously, they knew that this was not a life-saving drug. And so, the FDA allowed for personal use meds to be brought in, but RU486 was banned from that exception because of, you know, the safety and health of people that were using it. It wasn't safe and it wasn't healthy. And so after this, the Population Council, which honestly is a whole other podcast. They are all of the people that created that council and who are a part of it were all a part of eugenics and were all closely tied to Planned Parenthood, but that's a whole nother episode. But just a little tidbit about that. They gained patent rights on RU486 in 1994 after Congress pressured Rosnau Yukloff, the creator. And the creator went back and forth with the U.S. and the Population Council due to fear of repercussions, like boycotts and liability of the drug. And he was afraid of this because this is what happened in France when the drug was released and approved. There's all this backlash. People didn't want, you know, more abortions. They didn't want abortion in general. They didn't want this drug. And so he received all this backlash, and he was like, I don't want to do this again in the U.S. I don't want to be liable. I don't want to receive, you know, all this hate, all this feedback, all this criticism. And so the Population Council bought the patent rights, and Rosnau was off the hook, basically. And so then after that, there was kind of going back and forth of the FDA trying to, you know, get the FDA to approve of this drug. They were going through more trials for the FDA to approve it, filling out applications to get it approved. And then this continued up into 2000 when President Clinton encouraged, aided, supported the FDA approving it. And so after that, the drug was approved. It was approved on emergency use, and so that's also kind of a little interesting fact. To this day, the Population Council still holds the rights to RU486 in the U.S. A little bit about the Population Council. It's an international population control organization that started in 1952. The Population Council licensed Danko Laboratories to distribute the drug in the U.S. And so Danko Laboratories, I'll mention them later, but they are the only laboratory that manufactures this drug. So now I'm going to go into how does it work? Well, according to a Harvard University analysis paper. The RU486 is a steroid that was created to specifically abort babies. And so the drug blocks progesterone in the uterus, and this causes the uterus lining to soften and break down. The process for taking the pill is long and is painful, and there is a 95% effective rate for ending the pregnancy that is 10 weeks or earlier. So that effective rate goes drastically down once it's after 10 weeks. So even if you're at 11 weeks, the effective rate is going to drop quickly. So how does a woman go about taking this drug? She will go in for her first appointment. She will take the RU486 right in the office. Typically in the office, the doctor will do an ultrasound to see how old this baby is, how many weeks, how far along she is, and then they will also determine if she's having an ectopic pregnancy. And so she'll leave the office with this first medicine. Once she goes home, she will take her second medicine, which is misoprostol, and then over the next 24 hours, the woman will experience cramping, excessive bleeding, and stomach issues like vomiting, diarrhea, and nausea. The RU486 is meant to kill the baby, while the misoprostol is meant to expel the baby by creating contractions. So the woman can essentially give birth all alone, probably in her bathroom, with no medical treatment, nobody there watching her, monitoring her. And like I said, she's probably alone, probably experiencing a lot of pain, not really realizing that she is in fact giving birth. And so obviously with all of that, there are a ton of complications that have been reported, and you know, obviously a ton that haven't been reported because of the abortion industry. But we're going to go into all the different complications that can happen. So many women hear this process and think, you know, it's discreet, it's immediate, I'm in. What they don't realize is that there are so many complications. Women are required to be seen in person, like I mentioned, where their pregnancy could be dated accurately. This is to ensure that the pregnancy is 10 weeks or earlier, as complications after 10 weeks raise significantly. So the woman also needs to be checked for an ectopic pregnancy, because if they are having one and they take this drug, it could be very life-threatening and they could get an infection and ultimately die from it. So after all of this has taken place within 24 hours, they are supposed to have a follow-up appointment to make sure that the RU486 was successful, to make sure that there's no remaining parts of the baby left in them, to make sure that there's no infection. And so, what exactly are the number of complications that are reported? Well, some states like California refuse to report anything really on abortion. They won't report how many abortions happen in their state. They won't report complications of anything. And so, you know, we do have numbers, but they don't include these states that won't report any numbers to the FDA. So they're not exactly accurate. There, you know, there could be more. But for now, what we have is the FDA has reported 24 deaths and 4,000 complications. And also, complications aren't required to be reported since the Obama administration. So there are many times where they're just not reported at all. But so these ones I just named are the ones that we know of. A 2019 study from the Obstetrics and Gynecology found complications rate are 20%, while surgical abortions are 5.6%. So there's clearly a higher rate of complications that do get reported that these studies have found compared to a surgical abortion. And so the biggest complication that is reported is excessive bleeding and incomplete abortion, which could lead to so many other different complications like infection and sepsis. And so moving on to the next point, there's all these complications, but how prevalent is the abortion pill? And so the CDC actually just released their 2019 report. This is before COVID, and so the numbers could be significantly different, but I think they kind of speak to the path that the U.S. is taking with the abortion pill. And so during COVID, actually, before we get into the report, but during COVID, Biden lifted the restrictions to make it easier for women to get the abortion pill so they didn't have to be in person to get it because, you know, I guess they felt like women couldn't go out to the doctors safely and get an abortion. And so from this CDC 2019 report, California, Maryland, and New Hampshire refused to give the numbers on their abortions performed that year. They've done this for a while. They have a history of it. And so these numbers are from every other state. But keep in mind, California is, you know, the hub of abortion. They have a lot of abortions occurring there. So keep that in mind. But 2019, 629,898 abortions took place nationally. And so this was an increase. In 2018, there were 38.6% of abortions were done from the abortion pill. And then in 2019, it increased to 42.3% of abortions were done through the abortion pill. And so, in Michigan specifically, in 2020, there were 29,669 abortions just in Michigan. 15,333 of those abortions were done through the abortion pill. And so we can see that this is gaining rapid popularity. And it is something to be really concerned about, especially, you know, what the new lack of regulations that we've had on it, especially what happened yesterday, which I will get into. And so, as of yesterday, the FDA approved the abortion pill through mail. So, not only, this was already approved during COVID, but it was a temporary approval from the FDA because of COVID. But now it is a permanent thing that is not going to be going away. And so why has this been done? Well, it's cheaper for everyone. It is profitable for abortion clinics, for, you know, pharmacies, for the makers of this drug, Danko. And so this is going to be done through telemedicine, which was a really big thing in 2020, where you have a face video call with your doctor. They don't see you, they don't examine you, which is crucial for having, I mean, I don't know how safe an abortion can be, but as safe as it can possibly be to have a medical abortion, you have to go in person, get your ultrasounds, make sure you don't have an ectopic pregnancy. And so eliminating that process is just putting more women in danger. And so it's also easier for abortion facilities because they can have their doctors do a bunch of different telemedicine appointments. They don't take that long. And if there's complications, they don't have the emergency room is probably going to take care of them, because you're going to have doctors doing these telemedicine appointments, you know, all around the country. Their patient isn't going to come see them across the country if they have a complication. They're probably going to go to the emergency room. And so it kind of becomes their problem. The abortion facilities don't have to mess with it, and they also don't have to do any cleanup. You know, if they do an abortion in the facility, there's going to be a lot of cleanup. There's a lot of prep time, recovery time. they don't have to mess with any of that anymore. And so this is why it's being pushed so much, is because, you know, to all of these people, it's going to be profitable and it's going to be easier. But what are the dangers of all of this? You know, I said all these complications. In the future, what are we looking at? What is going to be the things that are going to be the worst about all of this, the most dangerous? First of all, there's going to be no regulation for who is taking it and how they're taking it, meaning that this could be used in human trafficking. This could be used in cases of rape and incest and abuse. An abuser can just easily get their hands on this drug through the web. They can buy it online. They can give it to the people that they've been abusing, and the abuse will be able to continue without bringing someone into a facility and getting help. And so there's another concern of women in rural areas where they have these appointments, and it's marketed towards women like this to some degree, of women who don't have access to abortion facilities. Maybe they live in rural areas, they live in a town where there isn't an abortion facility. And so my question is, what happens when they have a complication? Who are they supposed to talk to? Who are they supposed to go see? If they live in a rural area, maybe there's not a lot of doctors for them to help. So there's no regulation of this. There's also a really big issue with ER doctors not reporting complications. And so actually Live Action just reported on this the other day. There was an article from Salon, and they reported about Dr. Daniel Grusom, who is the senior advisor for ILBIS for Reproductive Health. And this organization that he's the advisor for is funded by Danko Laboratories, who I said earlier, I don't know if you remember, they are the one that manufactures the abortion pill, the only manufacturer in the whole U.S. So they are funded by Danko Laboratories. So already a conflict of interest for this doctor. He is also a part of the Future for Abortion Council, which is in California. The governor there is also a part of this and the one that is in charge of this. But anyways, this doctor, he's an abortionist, is encouraging ER doctors to avoid reporting abortion pill complications. So like I said, after all of these telemedicine appointments, if there are complications, they're all going to go to the emergency room. From the numbers I said earlier, there probably will be a lot of complications of bleeding, of incomplete abortions. So the story was released by Salon, and they quoted this doctor saying, "Some of this is going to fall on emergency department clinicians. We need to get better about really figuring out what questions we need to ask and what we need to document in the medical record." And then he continued to warn that the medical record could be used to prosecute women if abortion is legal after, hopefully, Roe versus Wade gets overturned. And so there's a lot of questions I have about this statement, just a lot of things to kind of digest. So one thing, he's worried about women getting prosecuted if they look through medical records, they come in for complications to the emergency room. But in Michigan, our law doesn't prosecute women for getting abortions, and it never has. Our 1846 law prosecutes the abortion providers, the clinic, the facilities, whatever. They don't ever, and they never have, prosecuted women for getting an abortion. So I think that might be a little bit of a scare tactic on this doctor's part to scare women into saying, oh, I don't want to get prosecuted, so, you know, whatever, I'm not going to worry about this very worrisome statement that this doctor, this abortionist, has made to just not report them. And so my second thought is, what is this doctor trying to hide? Is he trying to hide the fact that he knows there's going to be a lot of complications and he doesn't want the FDA to find out? Or I don't know, does he not want to put a bad name on the abortion pill? Does he what is he trying to hide in this? Because there's clearly is something. He also has made multiple statements all over social media saying that he wants the abortion pill to be like Tylenol, to be ready in someone's medicine cabinet, to just be, to have it before you even get pregnant and want an abortion, should just have access to it once Roe versus Wade is hopefully overturned. And maybe if he was just a normal abortionist, a normal doctor, these statements would be like, oh, he's just one voice. He's just some doctor nobody really knows. He's not. He has a lot of influence. He's a part of so many different organizations, on the boards of so many different organizations. He was once on the board of NARAL. And so he has a lot of say in the media. The media is constantly publishing his studies on the abortion pill, which I'm sure are very biased. And so this doctor has a lot of pull in the media. And so for him to be saying these things, making them seem normal, making them seem like a average thing for us to be doing, is worrisome. And it is a danger of, you know, taking away in-person appointments. And so, because obviously, I mean, my prediction, and you can see from the numbers and from the complications, there will be more complications if telemedicine is taking over in-person appointments, because there won't be no monitoring, there will be no ultrasound, and there will be no check to see if there's an ectopic pregnancy. So that is my prediction, and I think this doctor also can kind of see that as well. The last question, where are we and where are we heading with this? Where are we right now currently in the state of the abortion pill? Where is it in the US? Where does it land? And where is it heading? So, well, right now we are starting our telemedicine phase, which I said is a video call with your doctor. There's no exam, there's no follow-up. If there's anything goes wrong, you have to go to the ER, basically. So within this change, I guess, that the FDA made for the abortion pill, it's called REMS, and that means risk evaluation and mitigation strategy. So they changed the REMS of this, and REMS are just like restrictions that you have to follow when you are administering or taking a drug. And so the abortion pill is very risky, so they put it into this REMS category, put REMS on it. So they changed the REMS, meaning that you don't have to do any of those things that I just named. In the future, we could be heading towards a risk of, you know, teenage girls getting this online and taking it without anyone knowing and just having severe side effects, going through an abortion alone, mental side effects, going through an abortion at school. You know, you never know of, because these teenage girls will be able to buy it online. And then also where we're at right now is the abortion pill, you can get it through online and through any pharmacy. And so it makes it really easy to access this. The pharmacy just has to be registered. And who's to say who you're buying it from online? You could be buying it from a person that says they're selling the abortion pill, but really it's something else. And so there's no regulating, you know, is it getting put on the black market? Who is creating this? Is it actually the Danko Laboratories that's creating it? Are they mass producing it and it's not as effective? Or is it, you know, there's going to be really no regulation on it once, I mean, we're already there, but once telemedicine is being used. And so those are kind of where we are, where we're going, the concerns. And I know all of that sounds really overwhelming and really negative, but a side note that could also be its own podcast episode is there is an abortion pill reversal. And I hope in the future that this can be made more widely accessible, it can be more known. There are a lot of pregnancy resource centers and a lot of just organizations that give out these abortion pill reversals. And so, you know, we have a lot of different fact sheets on our website about them and different information. But essentially, I said that the RU486 is a progesterone blocker. This abortion pill reversal is just adding back the progesterone, and it has to be taken within, I believe it's like 24 hours that you've taken the first pill. There is a chance that you can save your pregnancy if you changed your mind. That is a really great resource. It has been studied. It's not dangerous. People take them when, you know, they take them for all sorts of different reproductive health things, miscarriages. If they, you know, are trying to prevent a miscarriage, they'll take this medicine. And so I think a big part of the media and the abortion industry is trying to squash this reversal because they don't want women knowing about it and using it. But it could be a great tool if our predictions are correct in the future when, you know, a lot of abortions are being performed through the abortion pill. And so that kind of gives us a little hope and kind of, you know, a little happy ending to where we're heading with the abortion pill. Hopefully we can make it more accessible to have this reversal. I know we are already, you know, in the works of that and well on our way. So that is really encouraging. Like I said, we have resources for that on our website, and we also have a whole page of pregnancy resource centers throughout Michigan. I believe there's also a organization that solely does the abortion pill reversal as well, and I think that's also on our website. But that is all we have time for today. That is our deep dive into the abortion pill, RU486, the history, the complications, what's happening with right now. All of that FDA approval happened yesterday, and so it's really important to know about it right now to kind of prepare for what's going to happen in the future and just stay hopeful that Roe versus Wade will overturn abortion, and that, you know, most states that already have a ban on it or restrictions, that hopefully those can stop these telemedicine abortion appointments. So thank you for joining us today. I hope you have a great weekend.